Hello everyone and welcome to the annual special PAX Pixel Cast, right from the PAX 4, well not really, from around the block. But my name is Matt Houston and I'm hosting this evening's festivities, this podcast this year, and I am joined by all the best parts of the editorial team, because the other one's over in Japan, so he
Too soon to use the abusive language, so yeah, you know what I want to say.
So he's in Japan and he's not the best part of the editorial, but Paul and Jess are. Jess, how are you?
I am good. I am doing very well. Very excited still about PAX, even though we're a couple of days in. Yeah, it never stops being fun.
It's always good, isn't it? And Paul, yourself?
First PAX Pixel Cast since we were doing them in the booths, the 18th. Yeah. And I think first Pixel Cast in almost just as long as well for me.
Probably.
Yeah, close.
He's too busy being an AFL podcaster.
Kind of fell off the Pixel Cast before that.
He's going on. He's a football star now, so you know we've got to feel privileged to have him on.
It's off season.
I've got time. You know, yeah, cool. Yeah. All right then. So obviously we're just going to talk about what we've seen on the PAX 4. This year's been kind of an interesting year, I think, in that there's some returns from big game companies. There's also some missing companies that are almost always here that are not here this year. So it's been quite an odd one. But I won't start with Jess because I know she has no notes. Jess, give me something you've discovered about this year PAX. Not necessarily anything you've seen, but what have you felt about it?
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like I've seen quite a few games this year. I mean, often I don't have that much time to play games because I'm upstairs in the PAX Together Lounge, which is still the best part of PAX for me. And that's still been great, and I have been doing that this year and would recommend to anybody who gets a chance at any time to go check out the PAX Together Lounge in whenever you're listening to this, future years, probably.
Going into 2026.
I think for me, the PAX show floor, like you said, there are some notable absences, which always leaves more room for indie games. And, I have actually had a chance this year to check out more of the, games from New Zealand, some student games, some indie games from across various states. There's a lot to see. More games, fewer hardware booths this year, and fewer just like loud booths. I feel there's still like an esports presence, and there's still, you know, the usual hustle and bustle and announcers, but it feels
less screaming, less shouting, which is we're old, so that's nice.
It's glorious.
It feels more chill this year.
Yeah, yeah. Especially even on Saturday when it was like wall to wall people, it felt less obnoxious, I guess.
Yeah.
Is a word for it. Not that I've got a thing against hustling for free gear or whatever.
Sure.
But yeah.
No, let's judge them.
Yeah. Like, you want a t-shirt, get your t-shirt. You go for it. But yeah. Yeah, it's definitely a chiller vibe, I think. Maybe because of some of those hardware booths tend to be the ones that like to
do the
t-shirts and stuff like that. There was no ROG this year, which is usually a big booth. You know, the Aftershock booth was significantly smaller this year. Didn't seem to have the gigantic, obnoxious PC builds that they usually do. Just some like still cool stuff, but, you know. Yeah, it just seems a bit tamer, I guess, maybe. What about you, Paul?
A bit like Jess said, lots of really cool indie stuff around. The whole back half of the building where the tabletop is, I couldn't care less about. So it always makes life a little bit easier when you can just ignore half of what's going on.
And Stephen's not here to argue.
Sucked in. Enjoy your trip to Japan. Checking out the indie stuff's really good. As you alluded to, the AAA presence is not huge this year, and even some of those who do have some level of representation here have kind of folded themselves in with Nintendo. So there's a little black curtained off bit where you could find Elden Ring and you could find Borderlands, and I think Yakuza, like some of the quote unquote more mature games that Nintendo doesn't like everyone seeing. Mm-hmm. Which cue your comment about Yakuza, which everyone should see it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's kind of been Nintendo or indies for the most part, whether they're local or whether it's from Code or, you know, whatever else. But
the Xbox booth is small, but it's not bad, and it also gives people a chance to get hands on with it.
And you can play Ninja Gaiden in there as well.
You can play Ninja Gaiden, the demo of Ninja Gaiden. Also, they have, I think, the limited demo of The Outer Worlds 2, which I've played before, and it's very good. It wasn't a bad show from Xbox. It was just a smaller presence.
Yeah.
The Nintendo's very big this year. And then I was talking to the Nintendo PR before the event, and he said it's officially the biggest presence they've had at any PAX anywhere.
Yeah, right.
Wow. So yeah, it's a big boost.
Biggest physical footprint.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
I mean, it helps. Like they've got Hyrule Warriors, they've got
Kirby,
they've got Pokemon,
Metroid's
there, and then of course the Switch 2 is still fairly recent, so there's still plenty of opportunities to show off the platform, to show off Mario Kart, to have engagements around that. Like it's kind of the sweet spot if you wanted to show stuff off, and that's not even factoring the third parties. They had Silksong in there, they had other indie titles and third parties in there. Like we reference a general lack of, like, not a lot of Xbox and then no PlayStation whatsoever, and they don't need to have a million of their own games. They can get there and then they can show off the slate of games that are available through PlayStation Plus or through Game Pass or
idea of Xbox. I would really like
it's so easy to do it.
They used to do that in PAX. They used to have an idea of Xbox presence, which and that was a program that was always very good. So yeah, it's a shame they didn't take that opportunity. But, you know, there's a shame in a lot of things that Xbox are doing at the moment.
Well, again, they're not the only one. Again, PlayStation's much the same. So, worse, actually. They didn't show up at all.
Yeah, fair enough. For me, I did my usual hardware loop. Check out all the cool gear and toys on show, because I'm that kind of guy that likes cool toys. It was like you said, there was no ROG this year, which is odd, because they usually have a massive presence. And Lenovo, I went and spent some time with, but it was a smaller presence. Corsair was also a fairly small presence. So it seemed like they've shrunken their footprint on the hardware side of things. That said, I guess I did see some cool stuff. If you ever get a chance to check out the Lenovo new laptop that's 3D, it is unbelievable.
He's been talking about it for days, everyone.
Yeah, because I was lucky enough to see it at a product launch a few months ago. You know, when I met you up that night. Yeah, that's when I saw it. It is wild. It's like the 3DS times a million. The screen goes in, so when you're looking at it, it's like the 3DS where you look in. It turns any game completely 3D. I was playing Cyberpunk in 3D. It was wild. And it looks, and I was worried about how it would show here at PAX, because if you're not looking direct on, it looks stupid. Because whatever the screen's doing, you can't look at it from here. Yeah. But if you're looking dead on, it literally adjusts to your eye line and then gives you the best perspective on 3D. And
damn.
It's not a cheap thing. It's about $9,000 from memory. But it is amazing. And as far as a tech nerdy thing to check out, it was so cool. They also had the Legion Go 2, which is a chunky boy, but it's cool and it's really powerful handheld, really good battery life on it apparently, quite comfortable, and also has that Switch kind of deal with the controllers, so it can sit in a dock and you can play with the handheld separate, which is nice, you know, if you're traveling and want to sit it on a table, because it is heavy, much, much heavier than the ROG systems and of course the Switch, so I can see people wanting to use it more with that one because it is slightly bigger.
How is it going to go with my tiny hands? Like how?
I think you should be right. Yeah. Like the actual bit where you.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'm not worried about the weight. I'm worried about, like, are my hands going to fit around?
And they also do
now, like. Yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. They're pretty small hands. So we've just done a little comparison of.
And it does come with like the Switch controller style thing where you can put them on.
A little thing.
So, I think they've thought about that.
Okay, great.
More so than the last model of the Legion did.
Good to know.
Which was very angular and kind of a bit awkward.
Yeah, ergonomically strange.
Yeah. I think this one felt much better in the hands, and I think you'll be right.
Okay, great.
Else on the hardware, I got my hands on a levelless fight stick for the fighting nerds. That shit's odd. Let me tell you, as someone that grew up in arcades with an arcade stick and, you know, playing Street Fighter the traditional way, this is what the new pros are using, these levelers.
What is a levelless?
So essentially, instead of having a joystick, there's buttons. And there's four buttons. But, so you've got, the way it's placed is in your hand shape. So your thumb does up, which is the weird thing.
Okay.
So you got left, down, right on your fingers,
he's
and then
waving his fingers around everybody.
Yeah, your left down right on your fingers, and then thumb does like where you'd normally position for a space bar if you were a driver's.
Yeah, okay.
Is your up.
Interesting.
And that's the different layout of it. But it's all button based and it's what pros are using these days. So I was really interested in it because I learned to play fighting games on a PC when back in the days when you had keyboards. Yeah, so right. it kind of didn't feel too unnatural to me. So I'm going to get my hands on one and see if I can do something about that and you know, mesh my old arcade experience with my old keyboard experience. So, and see how it turns out. But yeah, that was it. And Logitech had a cool controller where you can swap it from asymmetrical to symmetrical. However you want it.
The wrong way to the right way.
No. Shush, money. So yeah, if you like it like the Xbox style, you can have that. If you like it like the PlayStation style, you can have that. And also, if you want 6 buttons on the face, if you're like playing fighting games, you can do that. You can swatch it all out. Really customizable thing. It seemed to be quite sturdy. I worry about things like that with swappable components.
As soon as it's posable,
You worry about build quality, but it certainly seemed good. You know, obviously from a quick hands-on, so hopefully we get to see more of that later. But I guess that's my hardware brief. I'll let you guys talk about games.
Oh, okay. Well, we have that privilege of going to the media hour early on, and I kind of made it the mission to just tick off all the Nintendo stuff while I had the chance, because I knew that, especially once I cottoned onto, okay, this is it, AAA-wise, you knew the masses were going to flock there, so got in there and made sure I went after Hyrule Warriors and Kirby as well as Pokemon. Didn't worry about Metroid, but people want to see their thoughts. That's the same build that I previewed when I went to the Switch preview event in Melbourne back in... When did the Switch come out now? May?
Yeah.
Earlier in the year, anyway. So then, yeah, it might have been May then for the actual preview event. So that's the same preview build there, so I didn't go back to that one. But... Got some healthy time with Pokemon, Kirby, and Hyrule Warriors. Loved all of them. Different reasons. So Kirby, timeline-wise, I guess of all those games, is the last one to come off the conveyor belt. But it's shaping up really well. It's a chaotic experience. There's elements of, and I didn't play the original Air Ride on the GameCube.
So it's like a kart racer, isn't it?
In some ways. I kind of went in with that idea as well, but instead it's more like Twisted Metal car combat in some ways, without the violence and evil clowns. So there's kind of racing elements to it. I guess maybe a close comparison. Maybe it culminates in like a Mario Kart battle mode style. So then you've got there was some racing. They put us through some tutorials to learn some of the mechanics. There are some awkward ones where, like, you're obviously playing with the Switch controller, regardless whether it's the Pro or the Joy-Cons. You've got to use like the left stick to kind of, you swivel it left and right to try and take someone out as you're going past them, which feels, in my mind, a bit counterintuitive because you're already trying to use it to steer yourself, and suddenly you're trying to quickly jerk it left and right. Well, bad choice of wording. Swivel it left and right.
Nintendo does not approve.
Nintendo, like that. You're kind of swiveling that stick left and right, which then kind of throws you off your line when you're trying to drive, which I didn't. I didn't love. And then when you finally, get to this big battle arena. Off the back of, there's some mini games where you can kind of go through, a bit like what people have seen in Smash Brothers, where it just kind of rains these upgrades, and you collect as many as you can, which then positions you in, you can kind of favor certain play styles depending on what upgrades you pick up, and then you kind of get thrown into this battle mode style arena thing at the end there. And the one arena that I got to check out was overly small. You were still moving very fast. There is lots of players moving around. And I felt like I might have needed to go to the doctor to get some sort of diagnosis afterwards. Because I felt like
it's a lot.
It was very overstimulating. And I don't, like, I won on multiple occasions, but I don't really know how I won. So I feel like that bodes dangerously for everyone else once I finally work out what I'm doing.
Unstoppable.
Or once you know what you're doing, it could be the other way. It's actually the chaos that I'm thriving in. Or everyone else's inability to play the game as well, one or the other. But look, it's very good to play. I think it's one of those where I would just need to spend more time playing solo and just really learn the mechanics and learn how I can kind of use that quirk with the stick in terms of steering, but also using it to take people out, and then trying to translate it into a more competitive one. You can play 16 players online or 8 locally, so there's a bit of versatility there. But that was a pretty good experience. Pokemon, I guess, when are we going to put this up? Probably like the day before the game comes out at this point. So people will know their thought, will know what they want to know about this game in the next 24 hours or so from the... We don't have it. Putting it out there, we don't have, from those who are reviewing it across the world, you'll be able to get your thoughts from them. But I really quite enjoyed it. There was 2 little vertical slices that I got to play through. Weirdly, it wasn't on the same machine. They actually, here's console one.
Oh.
It was such a Nintendo thing.
Yeah.
You could have had both builds on the same, anyway, but anyway, reset it and pick this demo instead. But anyway, the whole thing with Pokemon Legends Zeta A, they keep saying it that way, even though we're Australia and it's said. Anyway.
Yep.
Is that you're trying to work your way up through the rankings, so you do start at level Z and then gradually move your way up to become this A-rank elite Pokemon trainer. And the sequence in the demo that I played, you were that Z-rank trainer. There was about three different trainers you had to go through there. They gave me a little predetermined party. There wasn't a lot of options available to me. But you'd move through a pretty tight, mostly linear sort of space, taking on three or four different trainers along the way. Quickly got in my bag going, oh, hang on, that's a grass type, so I'll quickly get out my flying type, and I'll, you know, yeah. Very, very quickly fell into kind of the old model, despite the fact that the Legends thing is a bit more a bit more live,
like
more
action-focused.
Yeah, a bit more real-time, thank you. Words of Vandermeer.
Yeah.
It's been a long weekend.
Like, that feels really good to play. Then the second demo, and there was enough time, the demoist goes, go over here. And I follow, and you could probably just even tell by the way I said that, like, okay, he's setting me up here.
Yeah.
So I followed the little pathway, end up running out of time midway through the battle, but he put me against this trainer, had a Pidgeotto that was about 10 levels higher than anything I had.
Yep.
He goes, there's three people out of more than 2,000 that have played this that have actually beaten it. I'm like, okay, well, I won't be one of the three.
Yeah.
and sure enough, my Mari, which was the electric type I had, my one great hope got wiped very quickly.
Oh, no.
And so that's it. It was basically all over at that point. Plugged away, but they all just... boom, 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 fell like dominoes really quickly. So, yeah. And then fortunately, the demo session ended before the entire party got wiped out, and so I can walk away saying I didn't lose.
A draw is as good as a win.
Yeah.
The second half of the demo then, because one of the big things from Pokemon X and Y, which is what this is built upon, the one that's kind of very French-inspired, from the DS, or was it 3DS?
X and Y,
was it? 3DS.
3DS.
It was the first game off the rank for the 3DS. Mega Evolving was one of the big things they had there. They put you against this Mega Evolved Absol. You had your Lucario. Then there was a little cutscene at the beginning there that I tried to just mash through because I didn't really want to know what was going on. I'll save that until I play the game. Got through into that. All of a sudden, this Lucario is part of my party. And all of a sudden, now I'm like, so I can Mega Evolve my own to go head to head with it. They're basically going to serve as like your boss encounters in a lot of ways. So the way the mechanically the Mega Evolving works is like you'll be fighting away as per normal, like your normal unmegged version of the Pokemon, non-souped up version of the Pokemon. And then as you beat up on the Mega Evolved opponent, it's dropping like these shards of sorts, which help fuel your own ability to Mega Evolve. So then once that bar is full, you unleash it yourself. There's kind of a timer for it. Throw the kitchen sink at it. In this particular case, and maybe you could have gotten there faster, I don't know, but I had to go through two cycles of Mega Evolving, so I threw hands as long as I could, lost that power, built up the bar again, one final assault, beat it, and that's it. The encounter was over, demo finished. But it's shaping up really well, but it's that vertical slicing. Like, I don't really know what's going on. I don't really get to customize my party and play the way I would potentially play this. There's no opportunity to go off and level grind and those things. You just did what you did and made the best of it. But it was good fun. I can see how this is going to be a lot of fun.
Had it run on the Switch 2 because last few games been a bit dodgy.
But this is their first now for the Switch 2, so that extra power should
solve that issue.
And when, what's the ones that were the absolute botched mess? It wasn't Sword and Shield, it was...
Oh, what's the Scarlet, one Violet.
Scarlet and Violet. Yeah. When those got their native, or like now get played on the Switch 2, no drama. It's just no that drama. Extra power. That's fine. Yeah. It wasn't that the games couldn't do it. It was that the hardware couldn't handle it. So now you've got that greater level of power. They run fine. Like a lot of the other Nintendo games now from the Switch that were starting to struggle near the tail end. So.
Yeah.
That's gone pretty well. And then there was Hyrule Warriors, which probably we can maybe both discuss a little bit because Jess has played that one as well.
I have.
But you've alluded to it, Matt, with some of your experiences with like different Musos over the years.
Yeah.
They're just good fun to kind of mindlessly slash and hack a little bit.
Yeah.
I personally am not the greatest fan of Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom. They're just not my Zeldas.
I am, they're not my Zeldas either, but I like them as separate games
to
Zelda.
I appreciate
almost.
Them for what they are, but I just can't.
Yeah, I couldn't get into them either.
I just can't get through.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is.
And I'm going to try again at some point, but especially now that... the Switch 2, again, the power thing, some of the little hiccups that people had complained about, they're not an issue anymore.
When you play Tears of the Kingdom on Switch 2 compared
it's chalk and cheese, right?
It's the loading times, it's wild. Like, it's nothing compared to what it was.
And even just some of the performance things, like I heard they've disappeared as well. Yeah. So not that they were massive obstacles. Like, I'm not that sort of snob for the most part anyway. Mm. So but it was just the direction of the games that I wasn't wild about. But Musou's, though, more than happy with the Musou. Just yep. slash and hack my way through. And I've enjoyed the other previous Hyrule Warriors games. This feels like more of that. You got put in this little cave segment, which I assume
yep.
there wasn't multiple demos. It was the same for you.
Yep.
Dropped in with Zelda and a few chums, mm-hmm. and off they... I won't spoil it for the sake of not spoiling for people, but you go slashing and hacking through different hordes there.
Six squillion goblins.
Really, yeah,
and
it felt really, really good.
Yep.
And, like, they still tutorialise it really well, where they'll show, XY or XX, and, like, they're prompting you to kind of explore and experiment with the different combo options that are there, let alone, okay, now if you hold what are they called on the Switch? ZR?
The
trigger. And then use your X's and X and Y buttons at the same time. There's different abilities that you can use there. Like, it's quite nuanced in ways that I really don't think the actual Dynasty Warriors games
Origins was very good for that. It was a significant step up for, like, more depth in the combat. Yeah. Yeah. Mm. So
I'm really enjoying it and, very keen to check it out in November.
Yeah.
I know we're still talking my games, but you've played it as well. So
I have played it. Yeah. And, I mean, I agree with everything that you said, and we won't spoil, so I won't talk more about what some of the kind of abilities are of the characters.
They're very flashy, though. They're
very flashy. So much going on. So many enemies, but your characters are also doing so many different things. Like,
Were they handheld? Were you playing handheld, or were you playing...
No, I have a
controller.
Yeah. Controller on screen. I worry about it. If it's super flashy, especially on a small handheld device, oversensitive on a small screen that will be.
Yeah, I guess, like, I mean, I was obviously just talking about Kirby being overstimulating, and I'm not saying that here. I think Kirby, there's just this assault of colours and flashes and everything everywhere, at least in the case of the Hyrule Warrior style experience. Like, everything is before you, and you know what it is, and you know what's going on, and you're slashing, you're hacking, you're kind of in control of it, as opposed to these things that are, races coming from off screen that come flying into your vision, and then there's distractions everywhere, as opposed to this, which is they're in front of me, they're probably behind me too, but I know what's going. Like, you've kind of got that sense of the environment that you're in, which makes it a little bit easier, even when you do action some really fancy flashy combo. Again, you're in control of all of it. I think it makes it a bit easier, even if you were playing then handheld.
But it's got some cool I guess Tears of the Kingdom relevant features to it, like constructs and the things that you would be using in the game to now wipe out enemies, walking around with like a flame emitter, flamethrower style, and some cool stuff.
I did hear about the flamethrower. That seems to be popping up all over Blue Sky anyway.
Really?
Talking about the flamethrower in Hyrule Warriors, I've noticed, like...
I mean, it's fun. You have a little energy bar like you do in Tears of the Kingdom.
They couldn't not have a flamethrower after all these people losing their mind over that big, gigantic thing that people were making with the giant flame.
The tank thing.
Yeah.
From the last game, which is all very appropriate, and of course people did that first, but...
Yes.
What
about the rest of the things you played?
The rest of the things? Me, yes. So I played a bunch of smaller indie games. Like I said, I spent some time with the... particularly the games that came out of Code, the New Zealand developers, who... big booth, big presence. At the show this year, which is very, very cool to see. Played a couple of different games. I would say there was something there for to everybody, many different kinds.
Yeah.
I played a game called Apothecurse, which is like this kind of side-scrolling thing where you make potions and stuff to take over, to take on enemies. It's got some like spooky... dystopian sort of not dystopian, like Lovecraftian sort of vibes to it, which was cool. I also played this game called Bashful Adoration, which is sort of like a 3D platformer, very bright, very colorful, about this like group of students who all have a crush on the same dude at their school, and it seems to be like causing problems for them within their relationships, but
couldn't imagine why.
No, I know.
Being a teacher.
See a lot of this stupid stuff.
Yeah. But the game's got a lot going on. Like there's 3D platforming, there's like a rhythm element, there were like boss fights and all this cool stuff that I'm excited to see more about. Probably my favorite one that I played was this game called How Was Your Day, which was the pitch that was given to me for it was that it's like Stranger Things kind of mixed with Groundhog Day.
Okay. So it's a roguelike.
So, well, so it's kind of like point and click adventure sort of game.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So the idea is that your dog, you play as a 13-year-old girl and your dog Beans has gone missing.
Mm-hmm.
And while
Good
you're...
Name.
Yep, Beans. Yes, Beans, like very, very cute. Very. There were posters up all over the stand about like, Beans. Have you seen Beans? Beans is missing and Beans is very cute. And as you are out and about looking for Beans, some weird spooky stuff starts happening around you in the town. There's like a woman chanting and the sky's going weird colours and lightning. Right. And I mean, I didn't get to play much of the time loop situation that's presumably going to be happening with it. But very cool vibes, like an 80s sort of aesthetic. So you can, you know, there's like 80s inspired tunes that you can put into the tape recorder and
so it's kind of like that Maniac Mansion style.
Which was very cool, a lot of fun. I also played a game called Toya, which has come out of South Australia.
Yep.
And I believe won some awards at SAGE earlier in the year.
Yeah.
Which you're like a little block, like a little cube. And you basically have to go around, like, collecting little shards until you can kind of press a button that then opens up a new part of the level. Sometimes you can use your smaller cube to, like, meld with a bigger cube, and then you become bigger, and so you can move through new pathways in the level that you couldn't have gone through before, but others are closed off for you because now you're, like, too heavy to cross the same kind of bridge that you could have before, or, like, that sort of thing, or... you can, like, pick up another cube to go with you so that you can carry it and then it can help you get up to new spaces and that sort of thing. Very simple mechanic, very, simple to play, but you kind of have to think a bit about the routes and stuff that you're going to take. Very kind of zen to play. I could see myself just easily falling into, like, a flow state and playing for, like, hours at a time and just really chill, really fun. Yeah, I think that's the ones that really stood out to me,
Nice. I do have to ask, I walked through the indies, and I have a lot of fun talking to indie devs and stuff like that, and Jess and I got to speak to some students, which was very cool. How did you feel about the indie booths this year? I know last year, I think all of us from memory, I know I certainly had a problem with, especially how Sunday was handled. It didn't seem professional. Some of these poor indie devs, I don't think, got enough training from PAX on how to handle the crowds and how to handle media, and there were booths that weren't manned and all these things, and it felt a bit, you know, not great for them. Whereas this year it feels to me there's
very polished.
There's a lot more professionalism on display.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Everybody I spoke to was really ready to talk to media, particularly.
Yeah.
They had really tight pitches
to
bring me in and, you know, this is my game, this is what it's about. Do you want to have a go? Clearly, I think some of them have received that feedback from last year and have gone and made an effort to get
And I hope PAX itself has offered help to these people. You know, a lot of the times I think these devs go, yeah, I've got to be at PAX, I've got to be at PAX. And PAX go, yeah, sure, we'll take your money. But I think PAX has a responsibility to go, this is what you need to do this.
Here's a checklist.
Yeah.
Do this at the very least. And so hopefully that's happened. Because... it seemed to me it was much more professional this year in that sort of area.
I'll shout out a few indies on my part as
Sure.
I know I don't mind myself a AAA, but I did check out some indies as well.
I know which one you're going to talk about.
Yes.
I thought I was going to go to AFL straight away.
Yeah.
No, Project Footy. I was going to save that till last, actually.
So
that's his one more thing.
He's one more thing.
A game that caught my eye algorithmically just popped up.
Yeah.
And I went and had a chat to the team. Like, we only started... like really promoting like last week.
Yeah.
So how amidst all of the grand final stuff I've been doing, this little game popped up in my thing. I have no idea, but I'm so glad it did. It's called Infant, like infant, but E at the beginning there. It's an elephant, little, like an anthropomorphic elephant. It's a 3D action adventure. There's splashes of Metroidvania in it as well. Looks absolutely fantastic visually, and it's still pretty early days. So I'm you know, feeling really good about where it's going to go down that path. But just felt absolutely amazing to play. Again, at such an early point in its development. You, little elephant wandering along, and you've got your little backpack there as you go. And I promise I'm not just describing what's that elephant from Johnson and Friends. The little one? Yeah. Anyway, but like you'll go along and you get your little lamp, and that allows you to navigate through and light spider webs and those sort of things on fire, so you can pass through here. The whole setting is it's a post-human world. Yep. And nature's kind of reclaimed everything, and the animals are still fine. I don't know, maybe it was some Last of Us style stuff. And then you go along and you finally find this large tooth that you can then use as a tool that you'll start slashing away at things. You can get through certain environmental obstacles as well. The only, I guess, critique I've got at this point, they just kind of say, find your way out. And that was kind of it. I'm a bit rudderless here. Mm. But again, that might have just been where they've dropped me within a vertical slice as well. But that game is one I'm going to be watching very, very closely for the next few years now. The Indigo Initiative is another one that I want to check out. Now, admittedly, I had a bit of bias in that one. A friend of mine, John O'Peck, is working on that one. And he's done a bit with the Rainbite team over the years. So that was like Trigger Witch and some other games too. But he was there working. And so the previous... I've just gone blank on their studio's name. But they'd put out Infliction a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And then Jono's come on board with them and they're working. So this is basically a very Portal-inspired puzzle game in some ways.
Mm.
Yes. But you're using different elements. Did you actually go check it out after?
I didn't get a chance, but no, I was sitting and listening to him give me the pitch.
Yeah. Oh, well, we're at the pub.
Yeah.
you'll use different elements, fire, electricity, water, whatever it happens to be, to kind of navigate your way through these puzzles. And you can basically use the gun that you've got to kind of absorb, suck up this power. And then you'll shoot the electric burst out at whatever it is to kind of recharge this device or whatever. And they're trying to make sure that one of the things that's really inspired them is actually Breath of the Wild, in the sense they want to make sure that there's many ways to skin a cat.
Yeah.
One of the things they discovered, there was these blades. You've got these kinetic powers as well, where you can kind of grab obstacles or environmental things and place them wherever you want. There was those big mechanical blades floating around that you could use. And in one case, you use them as like a ladder to climb up a wall and just shoot them into the wall and then jump. But there was a puzzle right near the end of the demo where there was like this big water tank, and essentially the goal was you needed to fill up, there was this big mass that just was completely dry. If you filled it with water, you could swim across.
Yeah.
And they had their solution planned and prepared, but then what they found is a lot of people were picking up these blades and then shooting it at the big barrel like it should puncture it. And then the water would flow out. And so they took that lesson the very next day. They've added that functionality in.
Oh, wow.
My God,
so
wow.
It breaks, water spills out, and off you go. And so they're really trying to... I think some of the best things for them will be playtesting now, because they can take, this is what people are doing, this is what they're trying. Maybe we can try and make a solution out of that. And I'm sure there's plenty of others where that won't be the case. Jono pointed out there was this block that was just sitting there in one of the first levels, and people felt like, I must need that. And they were carrying it with them the whole way, and they didn't need to. They're like, I think we'll get rid of that one. But I think there's a lot of potential in that particular game. And then there's the footy ones.
The footy ones.
Nice. Yeah, Footy Bash, which has now been... back to PAX for this, maybe it's third year now.
Yeah.
And honestly, for the most part, it hasn't really changed. You're still getting around there, punching people in the face and kind of half-heartedly playing football at the same time. And then the new game, which you alluded to a moment ago, Project Footy, coming from a few friends of yours. Ex-Mighty Kingdom friends.
Very nice, talented developers.
Yeah, and that was abundantly clear when I played it too. And thrilled to see already that one's announced for consoles as well as PC, so...
And it's got a commentary from Artie Dodder.
Yes.
Yeah. Which works in that sort of game. Yeah. If you've seen the game in action, it's absolutely appropriate.
Yeah, they're trying to... unlike Footy, there's a bit more simulation, very mildly, than what you would see in Footy Bash, but there is still the ability to recklessly throw punches to knock a player out of the way and then go chase the ball and try and kick it. And one of the things that I really liked about it, and they even gave away these little booster packs of cards afterwards, they've got a card power-up style mechanic.
Yeah.
So if you get a goal kicked against you, the person who is unfortunately on the receiving end of that then gets to select one of three or four different cards that'll appear that give them a power-up. And in one case, and I didn't realise it, a set of goals appeared in every corner of the ground. So you could just get the ball and just go, I'm going this way.
Yeah,
and you
can
go up there instead. And it didn't matter where you got it, which exposed me on a couple of occasions. Or you can, now goals are worth 10. And so you can really swing the momentum in the match really quickly.
This is like that party game, NBA Jam style.
Yeah, it's got that flair and flavour to it. So, and then just stylistically very different to what Footy Bash is going for, which is then also very different to what Big Ant had been doing or other AFL licensed games over the years have been doing. So I think both of them are kind of existing in their own space where they look quite unique, doing some really cool things, and And they're absolutely going to appease that community based on certainly my footy community who have said, hey, there's another AFL game. They go, put a video together.
Yeah.
I haven't yet, so we'll get there. But they're both shaping up really well. Like, I'm really enjoying those. And
yeah, nice. It's good to see. And I actually think there's probably more merit in this kind of indie-style arcade approach to Australian niche sports.
Yeah.
Than trying to do a NBA's
look, I just think AFL is such a hard game to try and translate into a very realistic sim anyway.
And I think it's much the same on the league side of things. To get that into a video game form is difficult. So maybe an arcade approach. Yeah, I've already upset someone with that. But, you know, I think it's difficult. And I think maybe an arcade approach would be cool if someone would think about it. Because, absolutely. You know... You can just have fun. And trying with the budgets that Australian developers have to compete with NBA or FIFA is insane.
Mm.
Yeah. You just can't compete with
that. You
just can't. No. And that's what people expect, though. If you're paying $100 for a game, they expect FIFA.
Yeah.
Because that's what they pay
for. Well, they've learned.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what you should expect. And they don't have that perspective, I'd say, to go, limited budgets for Australia, different sport, different, like, yeah.
Yeah.
So I think that's definitely worth pursuing. And fortunately, it does seem like both games are on track for next year, so... Footy Bash, they're targeting an early access launch, as opposed to Projang, which is clearly eyeing off a proper full release, but both for 2026, which is good.
Yeah, very nice. And you spoke about early access briefly, and I was lucky enough to have a chat with the guys from Obsidian and from Eidos, working on Grounded 2. It was a super fascinating chat about how they went back to early access again, where they could have possibly... but it was explained to me in the interview. They said they had to do that because it was such an integral part of how they developed the first game. And even though they've got more of structure in place this time around, they said what we missed from that community feedback would have been killer to try and release this game without that community feedback again. And he said it's really funny, and a lot of the times the community feedback is exactly where we're going. But
which is vindicating, right?
And they said that's really good for us to know we're working in the right directions, because a lot of times, you know, you can only put so much out at a time in an early access release and keeping it stable. But people will go, we want this, or this should be like this, and they're already thinking of that.
We're already doing it, just be patient.
Yeah, yeah, basically. And they said that was sort of vindicating. But it was such a wonderful chat with two developers that really, really felt like they were having fun. And it felt so good to see Eidos as well after, you know... They've had a rough run of it. They're one of my favourite studios. They made so many games that I adore, and yet they seem to just keep getting kicked in the teeth. So it's nice to see them working with Obsidian on a, which I assume is going to be a hit. Like, Grounded 1 was massive.
I mean, that early access build that I played for Player 2, which I can't remember. Did I dub it an early access review? What would we call it? I don't know.
Early
whatever it was
report.
Anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And I hadn't played the original. I'd been meaning to for ages and hadn't. And then I went and bought the original straight off the back of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course I went and bought it.
On the PlayStation. The pony comes through. No, never.
Well, I don't have my Game Pass sub anymore. So. Yeah. Well, I didn't at the time.
Yeah. And the other thing I got to talk with the lead director on Rainbow Six Siege, which was, it was interesting, you know, about how to keep a live service game going for 10 years without dying, which in this day and age is a fair achievement, to be honest, you know, and they haven't really chased trends. I mean, they've got microtransactions and things like that, but they haven't done the silly things that Fortnite and Call of Duty and stuff have done. They seem to have stuck true to what their game is, and which was, it was a nice chat. Yeah, it's worked for them, and they're still one of the top three esport games in the world. So, you know, they're obviously doing all right. Was there anything else at the show that you saw that was super interesting?
I mean, I guess continuing the interview trend, I got to chat to Rob Davis from Sucker Punch, who was in town. Obviously, they've just freshly released Ghost of Yote, so no PlayStation presence on the show floor, but he was there doing some presentational stuff, which is great. I'm hoping I'll get some audio out for people. Half of the file got corrupted, so the other half won't work very well in isolation. So I'm working with the team and see if we can kind of pull something together there. But it was fantastic to get to chat to him. It was in that dev diary format, so I got to kind of walk through not just Ghost, but he was working on God of War and God of War Ragnarok before that. He'd been a part of That's No Moon, which is the studio that people are kind of sitting tight waiting to see what's gonna
going
to happen
with
them. And every time I see them on socials, it's always quote tweeting PlayStation Studios related stuff, so I'm presuming that maybe there's a little partnership still there, with so many of them also having come from PlayStation over the years. Where else had he been? He was part of Pandemic working on Saboteur back in the day. Okay,
yeah.
He did Tasmania Tiger 3 with Chrome.
Yep.
He's even did a bit of work on Kinect with Xbox. Like, he's been cool. all over the place doing some really cool stuff. So it was great to get a little bit of insight into those experiences. And yeah, hopefully I'll be able to salvage that audio or record another half with Rob and get it out there for people sometime nice and soon. But it was great to get to chat to him because we've been talking for years about trying to make this happen and it just fell through on us. And suddenly he came to Australia for PAX and it just kind of fell into our laps. So.
Yeah, awesome. Mm. Awesome. What about you, Jess? Was there anything else you saw on the show floor that you know, or something that, about it you want to talk about?
I mean, I've already talked about PAX Together, which is a really great space. I haven't spent that much time in the tabletop area, but it's always so popular and it's always so exciting to walk through it and see people just having like the best time.
Yep.
People they've never met, just strangers getting together to play board games or to play D&D or like the D&D and Magic, the Gathering presence are so much bigger than they have been in past years because it's just growing so much.
Magic especially seems to be just like shooting off.
All of their collaborations. I'm actually showing interest for the first time because of the PlayStation stuff.
They're hitting all the right notes.
And they bring people in.
Yeah.
And then I saw the price and I'm like, oh, I don't think I can.
Yeah.
No.
The cardboard crack will get you.
I hit like 400 just to get all these PlayStation cards.
Yeah.
Oh. I can't do it. But if anyone wants to send us a bunch, we'd also appreciate them.
I would appreciate them. Yeah, that would be nice. Yeah. No, I'm interested in the...
Times two, please.
The Avatar ones. The Avatar The Last Airbender
thing that they're doing. Oh, they're doing that collaboration too.
Yeah. Yes, which...
not Avatar Blue People.
Not Avatar Blue People. Avatar The Last Airbender.
They'll look really good and then there'll be no substance to them.
No, yeah. That's not true for The Last Airbender.
Last Airbender's amazing. Sorry, I was still referencing the movies.
Yes. In my day job, I am working on Avatar The Last Airbender now, so that would be a fun thing to have.
Yes. Tax write-off, research. Yes.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah. I think that means I get to justify buying as many of them as I want.
I also don't think I knew that. So that's
awesome. Interesting. We can chat about that later.
Absolutely.
But, it's very cool. PAX is so big and there are so many different parts of it. Like, no matter who you talk to, you could talk to five different people and each of them will have
five different
experiences. Like there's a whole cosplay section. The cosplay part of PAX is huge and I've never interacted with it, but for some people it's the only reason they come.
On that, massive shout out to the Spider-Man. I can't remember if I sent the photo in the editorial chat. So on the Saturday there was a big evacuation. Someone had accidentally set off the fire alarm.
The fire alarm was set off.
Yes. Everyone got evacuated outside, and there's this fixture out there that's like Melbourne stuff. It's not part of a PAX thing. And there was about four or five Spider-Men like climbing all over it and posing. It was absolutely amazing. I'll see if I can find the. I know, sorry, audio.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'll make sure I get it on socials if you haven't seen
it. We'll put it in the podcast notes if you can send it to us.
Look at that. They're all climbing.
Amazing!
I'll make sure that goes in the podcast.
Make sure we get it in there.
Yeah.
It was so good. And the crowd, like everyone's going, is my car going to be okay?
Yeah.
It was absolute chaos inside, but then everyone's just completely transfixed and like cheering and applauding these three, four, five. I think in the end, it got two Spider-Men that were climbing up this very thing. That I thought, I don't think it's meant to take your weight. This could go in. Like, there was a bit of heart in mouth, I think, at the same time, too. The one fall was...
The teacher in you went, kids,
there was a bit of me going, this could be chaos and it could be great.
Yeah.
But then also, like, just shout out to everyone running it because it was a bit of chaos. They herded everyone out really safely, did a great job with it.
I'm sure they've practiced it every year and
never had to do it
and finally got it in action.
Yeah, I did see Yug on Facebook going, well, that's a first.
Yeah.
But then the only bit that kind of fell apart is like, okay, everyone can come back in. So everyone goes piling in. They've gone, oh, but the exhibitors aren't in yet. Everyone get back out so we can get the exhibitors in to get it all set up. Because you walked in and there's all these people standing at Nintendo ready to go and people just walking over to things to start playing. Like, there's no Nintendo reps here.
That'd be funny.
A little bit of chaos, but they very quickly responded. Like, I went looking around to see if I could chat to anyone. Like, can you tell me what happened? And then I just walked off to my car. But as I'm walking out, the guy's going, get out of here. I'm like,
I'm trying.
God, I'm leaving. I didn't. Why? He goes, oh, there's no one in there to run anything. I'm like, oh, that's why I didn't see anyone.
It was so interesting because I was in the other half of the like convention center. And there was just nothing was different there. So like I was just sitting in the Together Lounge upstairs. No evacuation.
Oh, so you're in this stage area. Yeah.
And there were no sirens or anything. Yeah. So the only reason I knew that something was going on. It's because someone was someone was talking to their friend on the phone who had called them to be like, we're being evacuated from the expo floor. But nothing was coming to us being like, there's a problem. So we were all just like, oh, is everything okay? Like, is there a problem? Are we all... But it was fine.
Well, I will say that in a shock to everyone, I was at the pub.
Oh, yeah. Did you get evacuated?
You said that not very quickly. Like, oh, hang on, I can get a beer here. Before
So I was sitting at the pub and I watched everyone streaming out. I was about ready. I just finished lunch and a beer and I thought, I'll go and check some more stuff out. And then everyone started pouring out and I went, well, I guess I'm not doing that.
I got another beer.
It was an interesting addition to our PAX experience.
Yes.
I guess for me... PAX is always this perfect opportunity to catch up with people that, you know, mean a lot to me and I don't see enough. There's so many people in this industry and it's also a really good reminder that, you know, it's very easy for us and we've all felt it, I'm sure, that this industry is struggling and that the media side of things is struggling and the development is struggling and there's all this shit going on that makes it very easy to be down on it. And I find every year PAX is such a recharge for me mentally. To go, no, what we do is fun. What we do, there's so many good people in this. It's good fun. I really love doing this. And so I think for me, that's the importance of PAX. And I even said to my wife on the phone yesterday, she was asking me how it was. And I said, look, honestly, I could come and not go on the show floor and be perfectly content. I do, and I enjoy that. But, I mean, I could come and just sit there and talk to people, you know, catch up with my mates, see these people that, you know, have been part of my life for 17 years, but I see once a year, you know.
Yeah.
So for me, that's what the importance of PAX is. And I think I can't overstate it enough for anyone. And I don't know if you guys feel the same way, but it's so important to me in this industry that we have an event like this that brings people together. And I think regardless of what's on show, regardless of there's shit games, if there's no hardware, if the hall was just one bloke yelling stuff at people.
Which would probably be Doug if that was the case.
Yeah, it's probably Doug trying to sell the cult of the lamb. You know? it'd be still worth coming down and catching up with everyone. So that's my takeaway from PAX every year. So and it hasn't changed at all.
Yeah, PAX is absolutely about the people.
Yeah.
100%.
And you know, the fact that people complain that there's no Ubisoft or there's no Sony or whoever that's secondary.
There's always areas for improvement, but every year it's like you walk away from it going, well, I've got to see my mates and chat to people. We all get to talk, you know,
regularly
through chats, but not...
It's not the same.
Sit down, have a drink and have a meal and gather around a microphone and talk and those sorts of things. Like, there's always that distance or the separation of a screen between us.
Yeah.
So these sorts of things are awesome. Yeah. And a bit like what you said, you could throw away all the other stuff and if everyone was coming down regardless, I'd be happy.
Yeah.
100%. I say that as a local. You could drive in and out, but like, take it to Sydney and I'll go up to Sydney.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't take it to Sydney. I want to give me something here.
Take it to Canberra.
No, please bring it to Sydney. That would be great.
Canberra.
You've already got all your media and PR there. Stop it.
I'll do the politics.
You have Nintendo. Nintendo live here.
Listen, Canberra exists. Stop this fighting.
Don't take it to Canberra.
No.
Just fly to all this. Don't give it to Stephen. He'll just fly off to Japan anyway.
Yeah, that's
true.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's about it for our special PAX podcast. I have no idea what episode number we're up to because I didn't check. But, Jess.
Yes.
Where can we find you? What do you got going on? What are you going to tell us about?
Many things, I think. You can find me mostly on Blue Sky, where I am Jess Zam. Blue Sky thing is.
Yeah. Social or whatever.
I have a couple of things coming up. There'll be a review for Persona 3 Reload.
Yep.
Which is fun because I never played a Persona game before, so it's been an interesting experience.
That's the Switch
2 version. The Lonesome Guild, which is like a Don't Nod published game that's coming out soon, and also Dispatch should be on its
hopefully way real close
soonish. A bunch of things going on for me, lots of stuff to talk about, and then presumably I'll talk a little bit about the games you've heard me talk about today on the podcast.
Awesome.
More things to come.
Paul.
For me, obviously there'll be previews for essentially every one of those games that I discussed. But then still working through a bit of a backlog, I'll kind of get some Battlefield campaign review out there. Still going to finish off Silent Hill. And then it's casting the eye forward to the last few kind of big releases of the year, whether it's on PlayStation, Xbox, Nintendo, whatever.
Yep.
Well, I won't say whatever because it won't be PC. But I mean, I can run them there. I just I have to go into the shed to do it, and it's either icy cold or mosquitoes and blistering sun, and I just don't want to deal with it.
Yep, fair enough.
So, but yeah, plenty still to do, and then you know, maybe explore the backlog a little bit.
Yeah, nice.
Which would be novel.
You can find me at Huso on everything. I've got some reviews that I can't talk about yet because I'm not sure when this is going to go up. But I will have some hardware, cool hardware stuff. I'm going to do an article on that levelless controller that when it comes through, and also some more reviews coming through that way on hardware and things like that. So keep an eye out. There'll be plenty of PAX stuff. I'll have my interviews up as well from PAX, which were really interesting. So hopefully you enjoy those. Make sure you head over to player2.net.eu. Check everything out. And, you know, give us a shout out.
Socials for that as well. And, yeah, sorry, I didn't do my Paul James games.
Paul James games. Yeah, player2au on Blue Sky and Facebook and Instagram, which we do occasionally do stuff on. But yeah, thanks for joining us, and we'll catch you next time on the Pixelcast, which will be a more traditional episode with Tim probably in charge. Catch you then.
See ya.
Bye.
Yeah,
as you said,
that's a good one. Yeah, sorry. You can just cut off. If it's worth it, because this won't be until next, not this Thursday night, but.
Oh, a minute.